We recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group's Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of September 1st, 2011. She has been in service in positions such as greeter, ship person, she maintains the phone list, greeter coordinator, volunteer coordinator, as well as a sponsor. Her AA motto is, acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. So, the moment we've all been waiting for. May I have the envelope, please? Woo-hoo! The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week Award is Christine of Visalia.
I'm Christine. I'm an alcoholic. Wow. Before I got sober, this would have been a 2-drink minimum to come up here. I grew up in an alcoholic family. Both my parents were alcoholic. Didn't skip a beat with my brother and me. We're both alcoholic. He's just active. I had my first drink when I was 4. Actually, I had my first drunk when I was 4. I wasn't sure if I remembered it or if I'd heard the story so many times during my life that it became a memory to me. My parents were having a party, and I was serving cookies. And everybody had their drinks, and so I'd say, want a cookie? Can I have a drink? So the next one, want a cookie? And I have a drink. By the time I got around the room, I was saying, yeah, you want a cookie? And I'd have a drink. And everyone thought that was hilarious. That was the joke in my family for years. That was okay with my family. That's just not normal behavior. As I was growing up, I lived in a household where we went and got our parents drinks for them. So you open a drink, you have a drink, you take it to mom or dad. Every drink, you have a drink, you take it to mom or dad. When I turned 14, we used to do a lot of boating and camping. That's when it became okay for us to go to the ice chest and have a beer ourselves. I didn't think that was normal behavior, but I found out that a lot of people here were able to do that too. So I feel like I'm with my people. I never really went out and did a lot of partying in high school because I didn't have to. And I didn't get drunk at home either because it wasn't the focus. I was daddy's girl and he was my hero from about as long as I can remember. And somewhere around the same time he became my hero, I realized that there was nothing that I could ever do to satisfy my mom. And I spent about the next 30 years trying to do it. Still hasn't worked. I did some normal drinking, college drinking, and it was fun, and it was about the party, and it was about getting drunk. I mean, there's no question. We went out to get drunk. We went out to have fun, and you get drunk, and you do the, oh, God, I'm not going to do that anymore, and then you do it the next night or the next weekend, and it doesn't affect you during the week. I look back, and I think, well, that was pretty controlled. Binge drinking. Clearly alcoholic drinking. Alcoholic thinking. And I went on that way for a while. And then I had a couple of kids. You know, got married. Had my daughter, my son. I had my son May 3rd, 1989. And I had my daughter September 27th, 1990. So I didn't have time to drink. I was raising kids, and I didn't have anybody to support me in raising the kids. I was married, but I didn't have any support. So I did all of that. So when I had the opportunity to have the binge, it was on. If my parents kept the kids, it was a full-on weekend party. And I got divorced. And I was raising my kids on my own, and my ex-husband had the kids 6 days at a time. That was when I found the bar scene, because I hadn't seen the bar scene when I was growing up. And, you know, I was always a little insecure. I was always a little awkward until I had a drink. And then I was everybody's friend. Everyone in the bar was my friend. I had fun. I was outgoing. I sang karaoke. I cannot carry a tune in a skip loader, let me tell you. I had a captive audience, and it was great. And it still didn't affect my work. And it didn't affect my daily life. And then I met my husband, Chris. And he has 3 kids of his own, and we became a blended family. And he had the same visitation schedule that I had with my kids. So we went to the bars and partied together, and then we raised our family when they were with us. We did, you know, what we thought was normal. He's normal. I'm not so much. You know, when I look back on some of the times we went out, and the goal, of course, was always to get drunk. It was, and that was okay with me then. But I look back now, and the projectile vomiting, not such a good idea. You know, I shake in my head, vomit all over the place, not such a good idea. My dad had a heart attack and a quadruple bypass in September of 1996. So my daughter was diagnosed with a brain tumor that same year, and she had to have surgery and chemo. And we went through that for about a year, and she went into remission, and it was wonderful, and she was our normal as little girls can be, fun little girl with hope. And I decided I wanted to go back to school. And so I went back to school, and I got my bachelor's, and I went to law school. And during law school, in my second year, my dad called me on July 23rd, 2004, and told me that in 10 days he was going to commit suicide. So 10 days come and go, and he didn't commit suicide. It's like, okay. On the 11th day, I was at work, and he called me, and I answered the phone, and he said, "What are you doing answering the phone at work?" And I said, "Well, you're calling me." And he told me that he called to say goodbye. And he shot himself. That was August 3rd, 2004. February 7th, 2005, my daughter passed away from a brain tumor after a very long battle and a lot of surgeries and a lot of treatment, and she was really sick. And, you know, I heard something at a really wonderful retreat this past weekend, because there's a lot of guilt and shame that I have over that. And I heard that people say, "Well, I should have done something different." And I was told that, "Well, then why didn't you?" Well, because I did the best I could at the time. We did the best we could. My husband supported me 100% through school. He supported me through the death of my dad. He supported me through the death of my daughter. But I can tell you that after my dad died, alcohol and I started to get a little bit closer. After my daughter died, we became pretty good friends. In 2006 sometime, I wrote her a letter after she passed, and I told her that I thought I might be alcoholic. I didn't do anything about it, I just told her. and I continued to drink. I graduated from law school 10th in my class. I'm very proud of that accomplishment in spite of everything that happened. And I got the job of my dreams. I became a deputy district attorney at the Tulare County District Attorney's Office. I had been a law clerk there for 4 years, and I was living large, and I was still an alcoholic. The drinking was controlled, and it did not still affect my daily life. I didn't drink in the morning. I didn't drive under the influence. But I was starting to drink every night. May 14th, 2008, my son was killed in a motorcycle accident. Alcohol became my best friend. I started drinking every single day to get drunk so that I didn't have to feel anything. I went to counseling. I rehashed my feelings. I rehashed the accident. And I got some really, really big resentments. Needless to say, there was not a higher power in my life. But still, my husband stood by me. I did not participate in our marriage. I did not participate in decisions in the house. I was on autopilot, and he handled everything. In 2009, just another typical drunk night, my husband told me, this is it, I can't do this anymore. So I was pretty sure he was leaving me. And I was not going to have that. So I took all of the prescription medication in the house. And apparently I dropped something and he heard me. And he called 911 and saved my life. I remember things just, you know, I am the epitome of the progressive disease of alcohol because I look back now and I just see how it progressed in my life to the blackouts. You know, he would say, do you remember doing this last night? No, but now I don't. I was an embarrassment to him. I would embarrass him any time we went out, any function that we went to, because I drank too much and I got stupid. I said stupid stuff. I showed my ass. You know, whatever. No, literally, I showed my ass. I remember sometime late in 2010, early 2011, I started drinking before work. Well, Chris said he just can't take this anymore, and when he said something about me drinking at home, he said, and I heard, you can't drink at home anymore. So I had to drink in my car. I mean, if I can't drink at home, I had to drink in my car. So I drank in my car before I went to work. I'd go to the cemetery so that I could boo-hoo in the morning with my kids. And I'd drink a couple of tall cans. I'd go to work, and how I managed to function, I just don't know. And I'd get through my day, and on my way home, it was perfect. I was working in Porterville. I had a 40-minute drive that I could drink. It was started out with beer, and beer just wasn't cutting it by the end of the time that I was in Porterville, so I had to progress to vodka, straight, because, you know, you can't mix in the car when you're driving, so you just have to have the bottle. I I would drive, oh gosh, you know, I know the neighborhoods of Visalia so well, I would drive through neighborhoods so that I could drink before I went home. Like he's not going to know I'm drinking, right? He'll have no idea. I hid bottles in the hamper, in my boots, in my coat jacket. It's funny the things that you remember as you go through sobriety. I had forgotten. In an effort to help me control my drinking, he controlled the money. No resentment was formed there. So I would take it out of his wallet. I would take the change that was rolled. I would use my allowance. But, you know, when you develop a pretty healthy habit, $20 doesn't last very long for the week. I remember somewhere, like I said, in 2010, 2011, I knew I was in trouble, and I knew my disease was full on in control, and I actually wished that somebody would do an intervention on me. Somebody did, but not then. I woke up every day and said, shit, I'm still awake, I'm still alive. I prayed to a God I didn't believe in every night, please let me not wake up in the morning. And I said one of the most uncaring, thoughtless things in the world to my husband after my son died. I told him, I have no reason to live. Well, but there was him. August 15th, 2011, I thought after a dentist appointment it would be a good idea to swing by and get a bottle of vodka because I was early. I had a little more time to drink. I remember getting the bottle, and I remember leaving the Shell station on Tulare Avenue in Tulare, and that's the last thing I remember. It seems that I turned on to Cartmill, and I overcorrected, and I drove my car up a guide wire, flipped it over, it spun around and flipped it back over on its wheels facing the wrong direction. I just had my intervention. No one else was involved, and I wasn't hurt. And somebody got me out of the car, and nobody knows who. There was nobody there after I was removed from the car. Some man, they said, got me out of the car and sat me on a blanket. I was a 0.23 VAC. I could have killed any of you, your kids, your grandkids, and I didn't care. I was selfish. All I wanted to do was drink and not feel. I was pretty sure Chris was leaving me then. I went to a friend's house and stayed a couple of days, and he came and picked me up and asked me to come back home. That was not my last drink. I was charged with a DUI. I got fired from the dream job. I lost my income. I lost my insurance. I lost, for the second time, my identity, because I lost my identity the first time when my kids died. I lost who I thought I was. So, August 31st, I didn't have a car. I was drinking the whole time from the time that I crashed to my last drink on August 31st. I'm riding my bicycle down to the CVS by my house, and I'm chugging the beers. Oh, gosh, I got so good at drinking beer fast, I cannot even tell you. It was like, damn, now I have to go back to the store and get some more. I was hauling my butt down to the CVS to buy beer to drink it before Chris got home. Again, Like he's not going to have a clue I'm drinking, right? Because he's not drinking. So he came home one day, and he was mad, clearly. He's one of those guys that if I have one drink, he can hear in my voice that I've had a drink. And he came home really mad, and he said, I can tell that you've been drinking. Deny. No, I have not. I didn't have anything today, I swear. Well, I have this handy little tool. I want you to blow into this, and it'll tell me your breath alcohol. I said, no. He said, well, I know you're lying to me. I want you to blow into this. I said, fuck you. You are not my probationer. You are not my father. And you are not my boss. Oh, out came the bike. And a little ride to the Shell station. A couple of beers and a bottle of vodka, and I was on my way to the cemetery. Do you know that it is damn dark in the cemetery at night? It was daylight when I got there. Since I blacked out while I was at the cemetery, I had an appointment with my therapist. Clearly blew her off. She's at my house. My phone was dead. I was awakened by the sprinklers. I forgot to mention, I'm a faller. When I drink, I fall. Off my bike, down the stairs, out of the car, I fall. My phone was dead. At some point prior to blacking out, I wrapped the chain somehow around the back of it so the back wheel wouldn't roll. It was pitch-ass black in a cemetery. No moon, and I'm trying to figure out how to get out. So my bike won't roll, and I pick the back of it up, and I push it to the front of the cemetery. They also close the gates, just so you know. I'm still drunk. I have a bike that won't roll. It's dark. I can't get out of the cemetery, and my phone won't work. It's a good idea in the Visalia Cemetery to yell at people who drive by, hey, I'm locked in the cemetery. Help me. Very nice man stopped. And I said, please call my husband. I'm stuck in the cemetery and I can't get out. And he did. And my husband was pissed. And he called my therapist and said, I'm not picking her up. So he called the police. To tell them, he said, I can't open the gate. It's locked. The police have to lock, unopen it, unlock it. My therapist said, if they get there and she's drunk, she's going to get arrested for public intoxication. I said, oh, shit. Well, fine. This will be my last gift to her. I will go pick her up. I get on this little cement table with my bike next to me, and I'm sitting there, and I see the police come. It's like, oh, crap. So I duck down slowly. They open the gate, and I haul cookies out the gate. About that time, Chris shows up in the truck, and he picks up my bike, and he throws it in the back of the truck. Get in. Okay. That was my last drop. You know, acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today. I didn't know that that didn't mean I had to approve. Acceptance doesn't mean I have to approve. What I've learned in this program, oh, I am, you would not know me when I was drinking to today. I am a different person. I am such a different person. I am a different person from when I started this program, from 6 months into this program. I can tell you, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my marriage, and I am convinced that it saved my life. I have learned in my sobriety to accept the death of my family members. Hell no, I don't like it. I don't have to. But I can accept it, because if I can't accept it, I can't live. I wasn't living from 2005 to 2011. I didn't want to live from 2005 to 2011. I wanted to die. I found a higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're still struggling with that God's will, my will thing, but I have always believed that everything happens for a reason. And I've always said we don't know what the reason is. Clearly, there are things that I would like to know that I don't know. Today, I don't have to know the reason. It's not my time schedule. It's not my doing. I have a higher power that clearly had something planned for me, because I should have died a few times. And I didn't. I never had friends. Ever. And women, I did not like you. Not only were you competition, but I like to talk about you too. Made me feel better about myself. I don't have to do that anymore. I have friends. I got so many hugs when I got here tonight. I am filled with love. That's what this program has done for me. I have a sponsor who took me through the steps, and I was eager because I wanted to get better. Do I have all the answers? No. Will I ever? No. But I have the ability today to say, stay in today. Most of the time I have the ability to say, if it's not meant to be, it won't be. There again, struggling with that God's will, my will thing. But I know now I deserve good things in life. And I never believed that I deserved good things. I never liked myself. I never felt a part of, and I always felt less than. And I don't feel that way today. I have so many people that I could call and say, I'm having a bad day. Can you come pick me up, or can I come pick you up? So we can do that. This program gave me that. This program gave me a better relationship with my husband than I've had from the day we met. This last year that we have been experiencing AA together has been phenomenal. And he'll ask me to 12-7. It's just, and he's a normie. So, you know, I can't say enough about don't leave before the miracle comes to you. I haven't gotten everything that I wanted. I wanted a job in Ventura. They told me that my oral communication skills were weak. So I'm practicing. That was my higher power directly working in my life, because after looking back, I know that job would have been a mistake for me. I would have been unhappy. I would have been going back to what I thought was the perfect job when I was in Tulare County DA's office, where people don't mind stepping on each other to get up. I mind. I mind being stepped on, and I mind stepping on others. You know, I'm happy today. I'm happy. I didn't think I would ever be able to be happy. But I have a choice. I don't have to denigrate my children's memory anymore by drinking. I can know that they're proud of me and the accomplishments that I've made and the changes that I've made in my life. And I just think that things are going to get better from here. I believe that in my heart. Everyone said, to the newcomers, well, I'm still a newcomer. My sobriety date is September 1st, 2011. It works. If you think it doesn't work for one second, if you're thinking this isn't for me, just stay for a little longer. It's for you. It's for you. You are welcome here just like everyone else, and you will find family here like you never knew existed. Thank you.